Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
We are at the interview part of the show. Today we have a renowned author named Alan Orloff, and his newest book is called I Know Where You Sleep. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Alan. Thanks for having me.
So, you know where I sleep. I haven't seen you.
I like to stay in the shadows, you know.
I guess. So you've got quite the history of writing here. Now, how did you get into writing? Where did it start for you?
Well, that's a great question, because as a kid, you know, in high school, I hated my English classes. Just, I never read all the work that was assigned, the, you know, the so-called classic novels. And I would prefer to read, you know, science fiction. I read a lot of Isaac Asimov and Robert Heinlein. And, you know, I'm not sure I finished any of the novels that we were supposed to, much to the consternation of my father, who was an ex-English teacher. So, I mean, I was always really a, kind of a numbers guy, and the thought of writing just didn't appeal to me at all. In fact, I think I went through college without ever having to take an English class. You know, I was an engineer. So, you know, I did some engineering for a while. I didn't much like that. I went back to school for a business, an MBA. And again, you know, we never had to write anything, certainly nothing creative. So no fiction at all. Fast forward some number of decades, and I remember I turned to my wife and said, you know, Janet, I think I'm going to try to write fiction. And then I had to pick her up off the floor after she fainted. And she's like, okay, all right, sure, you know, go ahead. And I started with some short stories. Being an engineer, I sort of did a proof of concept kind of thing. So I wrote a few short stories, and they didn't stink too badly, which was good. So I took an adult education class at through our local Board of Education, whatever it was, through the schools. And the teacher I had was Elaine Rako Chase, who's a published author. And she was encouraging about, I guess we had to write a story as part of our assignment. And, you know, it didn't stink too bad. She said, well, you know, you got to lose the 50 semicolons you have in the first three pages. But aside from that, you know, there's some potential here. So I finished that little class. I took some workshops at the Writer Center in Bethesda. And, you know, I didn't suck. So I took that to be an encouraging sign, and I kept working at it, working at it. And, you know, you're a writer, John's a writer. You guys know it takes kind of a while to sort of get the hang of writing fiction. So I wrote some not-so-great manuscripts. My first manuscript is buried underneath, 6 feet under the backyard in an asbestos-lined container, so it's no harm to see.
Yeah. Well, that's just, but that's interesting because you're a numbers guy and technical, and you didn't really get into the, let's say, the structure or the, you know, the discipline of writing technically through a class of English when you were in school, but you still had a creative part of you that wanted to write. So when was it that you gained confidence enough to think that, well, I, you know, my story is good enough and I'll develop an ability to learn to write better? But so when was, how did you get that, I don't know, confidence?
Alan, when I get there, I'll let you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think, like many writers, you know, you write something, you're like, well, I don't know. Is this any good? I don't know. It's so, you know, one of the biggest things I think I've discovered since I started writing fiction more seriously is how subjective it really is. You'll send, you know, you'll have one reader read your manuscript and they'll be like, you know, you've done better work. And I'd say, well, thanks, Mom. But and then the next reader would be like, this is great, you know? And, you know, one of the skills I think most writers need to develop is whose advice to listen to and whose advice to ignore. So, sometimes you'll know when you've written something good. But for me, anyway, most of the time, I'm like, yeah, could be good, but I don't know.
Yeah. Ongoing process. It's kind of interesting. So now you write fiction stories. Do you have a particular place where you get the ideas for your stories? Or is it just something that comes to your head one night? Or where does it develop with you?
Yeah. Well, I think each idea sort of comes from a different place. There's no like one set. It's not like I go down to the corner store and say, you know, give me a six pack of ideas. I got some extra time this week. You know, make it a dozen. I got, you know, yeah. I'll write them. You know, sometimes I'll be in the shower and I think of an idea, or I'll be watching the news, or I'll be, you know, I'll see something going on at a store, or, you know, the novel that came out before I Know Where You Sleep is Pray for the Innocent. And I got the idea. I woke up at 4 a.m. one night. I was at Sleuth Fest, actually, which is a crime fiction conference down in Florida. And I woke up 4 a.m. I had the idea fully formed in my head. It was the freakiest experience I think I've ever had when it came to writing. Because it was a pretty convoluted plot. But the whole premise, boom, just flew into my head, and it was great. Unfortunately, every morning I wake up now without an idea, I'm a little bit disappointed.
Yeah. It's over. The peak is done. It's done. It's over. That's interesting. So you get the whole idea all formulated. Are the characters part of that as well, or do you have to kind of work and develop those into the story?
Yeah. Well, I mean, having the whole idea pop into my head was sort of a one-off.
Right.
That's more the exception. I think, John, I know you, Alan, you write mostly true crime stuff, right?
Right. It's all nonfiction stuff, yeah.
Right. I know, John, I don't know if it's the same for you writing fiction, but I generally start with, and it's hard to say whether I start with the characters and then the plot evolves from them, or sometimes I have the plot and then I work on the characters to kind of fit the situation. It's sort of an iterative process. You know, first you work on the characters and then the plot comes out, and then, okay, the plot's a certain way, so the characters have to be kind of maybe a little different.
Yeah, there's sort of like this moment or this idea, I think, that ignites it. You know, and the more sort of solid that idea is, like when you said you woke up in the middle of the night and you have this idea, which is just amazing, you know, and then you kind of build everything out based on that. And sometimes that idea can be a plot thing, or it could be a character, or it could be a moment, but it feels like you're always like starting with this nugget of whatever it is and building out from that.
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. Because you're right. Sometimes it's a plot twist or a plot, inciting incident that sets a story in my head. Other times it's like, oh, this is just a great character. I'm sure I can come up with a good plot.
Right.
I'll get this guy. Yeah.
Yeah, see, because I find that interesting, because with me, I don't really get to pick my characters. I don't really get to pick on who they are and how they go through the story or what they've done. I try to figure out best what they, you know, why they have become what they have. But so when you have a character, like a lot of these fiction writers, like both you guys that we've talked to over the last while, a lot of them say that the characters are like their children. They're very close to them. Is that something you feel, Al?
I would hope not, because I sure do put a lot of crap on my characters' heads. I think my kids have to go through that turmoil and that angst.
Yeah.
But you're right, Alan, because I've heard a lot of people say that, the characters speak to them, and the characters run off and do things, that they hadn't, that the writer hadn't thought of. And I always go back to a quote, I think it was from maybe Jeff Deaver, who said, you know, I had a character once who tried to do something I didn't want him to do, so I killed him.
Wow, there you go.
So,
I think that sort of is a strength, that whole, like, the character speaking to me. I know what's meant by that, but, there's something about the way you've built the character that's driving them in one direction or another. But sometimes when people say that, I think they actually might mean this character's, like, speaking to them, which is a little different. That's a little weird. My characters don't just speak to me.
Yeah.
Well,
I like to believe it. I like to believe that I'm the one in control, pulling the string.
Right.
See, that could be your next story. Maybe who you're writing about is in control.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Well, no, it's interesting. So do characters come from people you've met, come across sort of maybe in a coffee shop, in a store, or relatives or something like that, or are they just out of the blue complete?
I think that often they are sort of amalgams of various people I've met over the years. You know, typically they'll have one predominant characteristic that I want to focus on. I don't think that I've ever based a single character on a single human being. In my very first book, however, there was one guy who sort of was a cross between two people that I knew. I had this, we called him a cousin, but I'm not sure how or if he was really related to our family. And he was a diminutive guy. And we saw him like at the Jewish holidays when we would get together and we'd pick him up and, you know, we'd take him over to our dinner. And I loved this guy because he would always laugh at all of my jokes. And I was maybe, in my early teens, and he always smelled very heavily of aftershave. And it wasn't until years later that I realized it wasn't aftershave I was smelling. It was booze.
Oh.
And he always was so friendly and always had a big smile. So I based one of my characters on him. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I found that interesting. I know we had J.D. Horn on, and he said that if you ended up in his book and he didn't like you, you'd be a person that he would kill. So I can never get enough of fiction writers because it just seems so far out whenever
pathological.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Try hanging out with them at a convention. You'll get enough of them.
Oh,
oh boy.
Yeah, that'd be scary. So do you get influenced by other writers, or are you the type of person that doesn't read what other people are doing? You stay away from other fiction writers and just focus on what you do?
I mean, I try to read a lot of other writers, and I'd have to probably preface that by saying I'm probably the least well-read writer you might have met, because as I mentioned, I never read the classics. I don't really have any foundation of some of the old, the masters or the classic novels that I think a lot of the writers do. I mean, if you correct me if I'm wrong, John, but if you have an English degree or an MFA or something, you've read and studied a lot of, some of those writers.
Yeah.
And my education is mostly, Stephen King and Dean Koontz, who are great writers. But
absolutely,
I think I have a different foundation than a lot of other writers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think it's just, there's usefulness to having all those, mm-hmm. in your I guess toolbox or whatever you want to call it. I think in terms of trying to, I'm not sure that reading the great writers always makes people great writers. I think it makes them good thinkers, perhaps, but I don't know. I mean, I teach English too, and your point about getting high school students to read. I mean, Alan, I mean, it's like not all that different, even worse today, because now we have Netflix, and so you got to think about what people are reading. And, at the same time, I have an affection for the classics because that's what I was sort of weaned on in some way. So anyway, I think it's interesting. Yeah. I don't think there's one way to do it though. I guess.
No. I mean, in some respects, I think my education is lacking for not having read those.
Right.
But for some reason, I gravitate towards most of the more of the modern writers. So here's a bit of irony that will expose my ignorance. John, you might appreciate this. So, I read a lot of science fiction and horror, but it wasn't until my 20s when I was working in outside of Boston that my boss came up to me and said, look, I know you read a lot, but have you ever read this Private Eye series that takes place here in Boston? I'm like, that sounds great. So, of course, that was Robert B. Parker's Spencer series. So I read that and thought it was just incredibly, you know, awesome. I try to pattern a lot of my writing today after kind of Spencer. And then, you know, some years later, I went back and I read, you know, Dashiell Hammett and Ross McDonald. And I'm like, these guys are just ripping off Robert B. Parker.
But I think that's kind of I think that's good. I'm more in your side than someone like Copenhaver here, because being autistic, I stayed away from a lot of that and started late, and a lot of the classics I've come to know more recently, so it's not something I grew or was taught as well. So I'm sort of in that boat as well. It's not. I think it's possible, because isn't the idea and the story the most important to you, or is it more about the the technique?
Well, for me, I mean, I would have to say that my prose is very pedestrian. Again, maybe it's because I didn't pay attention in English class as a kid, or I didn't take the courses, or I didn't really flex some of my early writing muscles very much. So for me, it's, you know, the characters and, you know, the dialogue I think my strength is more in the dialogue and the story than the actual prose, honestly.
Right.
So if you equate prose with technique, then yeah, I mean, that's some things I probably need to work on.
Right. Well, you know, but I think you see that in all aspects of art, even in music. I mean, there's classical music and there's pop music, right? And of course, isn't it the same sort of thing? There can be a lot of technique, but it's more about the idea or the presentation of the idea.
That's a good analogy. I know for me, my goal is not to impress the reader with my wizardry of the English language. I unabashedly say my goal is to entertain when I write. I'm not really trying to, you know, a lot of writers are much better at teaching the reader something as they entertain or whatever. Me, I'm just trying to offer my readers some escapist fun, basically.
You know, I mean, so often, Alan, we as a culture have put a certain value on certain things and then make a hierarchy out of them, which is just all kind of, frankly, nonsense. I mean, crafting a great plot, achieving great dialogue, that's all, you know, technique. It's interesting how we sort of create these value systems about it. I think from my standpoint, it's all technique and it's all, it all takes a level of skill and a level of study. But it's just interesting how we sort of associate, you know, we create these little pockets of types of literature or whatever, like the literary novel or the, you know, thriller novel or that kind of thing. But really, that's not, these are sort of commercial inventions. And anyway, you get this sort of
maybe,
idea that.
But John, I'll point to your book, Dodging and Burning, which was a great book. Great book. It had all the aspects. It was very entertaining, yes. Very entertaining, and the story was great, and the characters were great. But it also had that depth of addressing some of the social issues of the time, which I think is terrific. And I, you know, it's something I would strive for, but I don't know that I've really achieved that yet. So I think, you know, if you want to use the term more literary, I think your book was more literary than many other mysteries that I've read. And that's a good thing. I mean, it adds that extra depth to it.
Well, perhaps that's where some of the educational points would help out. It gives you more, as John said earlier, tools in your toolbox. So this is important too. So do people that review your stuff, does that matter to you? Do having different types of reviews, good, bad, and all that, matter? And does it matter what other writers say about you?
Well, I think, given the choice, I prefer the good reviews over the bad reviews. Well, it always seems that the good reviewers have a lot better judgment than the bad reviewers.
Right.
That's just to be. They know what they're talking about. You know, I probably have less ego, less investment in trying to appease the reviewers than many people, and I'll explain why. I don't consider myself to be, I don't know how to say this, but I've never, you know, many writers I know have always wanted to be a writer. It's their identity, right? Mm. Me, since I came to this lately, and this is my second or third career, I never really thought that I would be, I mean, it's not something I pointed to or strive for that long to become a published writer. So I don't expect to get good reviews. I'm just, you know, it's just weird. It is what it is. I mean, I like good reviews, sure. But I don't, like, you know, like I said earlier, it's so subjective that somebody might love your book and somebody might hate your book. And, you know, That's up to them.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah, well, No, I sort of agree. I understand that. Like, at first I was all concerned about ratings, and then after a while it doesn't matter so much. But there is a point to where if another reader that you're aware of reads your book and says something good about you, or maybe bad, is it something you look for, or I don't know, it's hard to explain.
Like I said, I'm trying to entertain. And if I have, you know, 80% of my readers say, this is great, I was entertained, you know, 4 stars or 5 stars, whatever, that's good. That makes me feel good. If it was reversed and 80% said, you know, this is not entertaining, this is dull, I would feel bad, you know, because I haven't achieved my goal. So I guess I'm probably talking out of both sides of my mouth here, saying that I don't care what other people think, but I do care what other people think. I want them to enjoy their work. And there's also a sort of a career aspect to it, that I want the good reviews so that I'll continue to be able to publish books.
So it's
quite the process. So you're not writing, you're writing for entertainment. You're not laying some sort of lesson, or you're not trying to say something. Like when a person buys your book and reads it, and when they walk away, there's not something you want them to get out of it other than entertainment, or is there more?
Well, entertainment is my prime focus, but along with the entertainment, I think in each of my books, there's some sort of theme or message that's sort of underlying, and whether it's, technology run amok, or whether it's, politicians are bad, or there's something there. I do want to provide as much depth and interest as I possibly can, as long as I'm entertaining. So entertainment is foremost. But there's always some theme, some viewpoint that I'm trying to espouse. Not hitting someone on the head with it, but just sort of slipping in part of my worldview into my story. So,
yeah. So now, when things are going on in your life that are, let's say, stressful or heated, or even in the world, like how it is now, especially in the U.S., does that affect your writing? Are you still able to write? And if you do still write, does it make your writing maybe darker?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, I think external factors, you know, have to, inform your writing in some fashion. I think I have to be pretty impervious to what's going on not to be affected in some way. We just moved. We packed up our house and moved on at the end of January. And we were without a home for 3 months. right in the middle of the beginnings of this pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get a whole lot of writing done. Now, I don't know whether it was, it was too much in upheaval from the moving process and looking for, house hunting and all that stuff, or whether, the stress of the pandemic and the uncertainty sort of affected my ability to get the words down on the paper. In the past 4 or 5 weeks, I've been able to get back to my normal output levels. I think I'm human like everybody else, and I think, stuff is bound to affect my writing.
Well, not to worry. I heard the pandemic was a hoax, so don't worry about it. just move forward and don't worry about it. It's not real. There's nothing.
I thought you said you stuck to nonfiction.
Yeah. there's nothing to see here. There's nothing going on. Okay, don't believe that stuff. It's just now in your story, the book here, I Know Where You Sleep. What's the primary story? Set that up so people kind of get an idea of what they'd get if they pick up that book.
Sure. Well, that, as I mentioned, I read a lot of Spencer, Private Eye Spencer, and I read Robert Crace's Elvis Cole novels, and I really got into the whole Private Eye genre pretty heavily. And my first 8 books didn't have any private eyes in them. Now, if you look carefully, a lot of my protagonists act like a private eye might, but they were in various other forms of employment and so on. So this is my very first private eye novel, and I'm very excited that it came out. In it, sort of my little twist on things is the protagonist, Anderson West. He runs this little private eye agency, and his sister is involved. So he's more of your prototypical private eye with the moral code, but he's got to watch out so he doesn't lose his license, that kind of thing. And his sister is the loose cannon, vigilante character. So together this case that they work on is a young lady is being stalked. So they employ their talents to try to find out who the stalker is. Of course, Anderson West uses the traditional private eye tool bag, while his sister is sort of freewheeling in a little bit. So not only does he have to try to solve the case, but he has to keep his sister under in check.
Wow. So you're sort of into... You really like the old private eye sort of things. Do you like the old noir films and stuff too?
I've written a lot of noir, but it's mostly short stories, because in those noir short stories that I've written, the protagonist is usually a bad guy, and I don't think my psyche could handle writing 4 months writing a bad novel with that bad guy protagonist. So I've sort of taken the opportunity to write a lot of noir short stories. So right. I've watched some of the noir films, probably not as many as I should. There's never enough time to watch all the movies and read all the books you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand you watch all the Rockford Files, so.
Yes.
rewriting all of his shows.
I saw something in today's in Crime Reads today. J. Kingston Pierce. I don't know. He wrote a piece about the mystery wheel that was on. I guess first on NBC, where it had the rotating. This was back in the 70s. The rotating stories of McLeod and Banachek and Columbo and McMillan and Wife and some of those stories. And that's what I was weaned on. I was weaned on all those 70s cop shows and detective shows and Rockford Files among them. And I find that, when I'm writing a scene, I guess sort of subconsciously draw some of those images or setups into my own writing. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. It has a huge influence. It has to. I mean, I grew up with the same, and I think the same way. And maybe a little Perry Mason in there too, right? So,
uh-huh.
You know, it's really interesting. Yeah. Now, are you going to, now these, when you do a character, like when you did this new book, this Andrew West, are you going to keep that character and write more books around that character?
Well, it's certainly set up to be a series. A lot of that depends on, as they say in the business, market considerations. So, you know, if the publisher wants another book, then perhaps, you know, it sells well. If the readers want to see another case with those characters, then possibly. Is that a wishy-washy enough answer?
Yeah.
Would you be excited for that, though? I mean, you would want to write more with these characters, right?
I've set up a few of my manuscripts that could be series characters. So, yeah, I mean, I like the characters. I wouldn't mind writing more or writing new ones. I'm pretty flexible when it comes to what I want to work on.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to someone that's looking to write themselves?
Well, you need to read a lot. So I would say read a lot within your genre, but also read outside of your genre some. And you need to write a lot. You know, people say, and these people are these nebulous people that are there, you know, they say that you don't find your true voice until you've written a million words. I don't know if it's a million or 800,000 or whatever, but, you know, it took me a long time to kind of develop any confidence whatsoever in writing. And I'm not sure I still feel fully confident in writing something. But read a lot, write, get back. Mm. One of the most helpful things that I did was get involved with some critique groups pretty early on. And I found that to be invaluable because, you know, a writer sometimes can be way too close to what they've written. And, you know, sometimes just the simplest feedback can knock something loose in your head and you're like, oh, now I see. Now I totally see, you know, here's the solution to my problems. So I think, you know, those are some things I'd start with as a beginning writer.
Does recognition from other people like that, other writers or groups like that, is that sort of, does it help? Is it something you like?
Definitely the feedback is very important to me. I mean, I've been in the same writing group for 10 years, and we've met monthly every month we've met, and we haven't missed a month. And that's just invaluable continuity and feedback from a technical point of view. You mentioned recognition. I don't know what you're talking about, like award recognition for stuff, but that's more of an ego boost kind of thing, which also helps. You know, it's not like writers get paid a lot of money to, some do, but most probably don't get paid a lot of money to write their novels. So there are other incentives that help keep you going. And award recognition is one of them, for me anyway.
Yeah. Free Starbucks at the drive-thru when they know who I am. it tends to be more of a reward. Because I find so many of these groups, like Publisher Weekly and all this sort of stuff, it's sort of, you almost have to get involved and be a part of it in order to get recognition. Like, you don't if you're not part of any of those things. That you can be ignored right through it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, now that's another tip for beginning writers. If you are not plugged into a professional organization in your genre, I would suggest doing that. So I belong to Mystery Writers of America and International Thriller Writers and Sisters in Crime, and those are great for networking, for learning sort of the business aspects, certainly, but there's plenty of craft workshops that they sponsor, and they're a great way to meet up with critique partners. So I'd encourage, and then every genre has them. You know, there's a Horror Writers Association, there's a Science Fiction Writers Association, there's a Romance Writers Association.
Yeah.
You know?
Sex Writers Association.
There's a, I'm sure there's an Erotic Fiction Association. I think, Dave, you have to be, I'm not even going to make a joke there.
Well, yeah. Well, John's a big part of that. I think he runs it.
Oh, do I now?
Yeah, you're the president. I'm sort of mixed on them, but I agree that they're good to be a part of, because if you're not, of course, you won't be brought into that circle so much, so to speak. But sometimes they irritate me as well, so I'm kind of mixed on them. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a bitter.
Well, a lot of them are going through some upheaval now, rightly so. A lot of them have been sort of run by the old guard, you know, the old boy network.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that needs to, you know, come up into the modern times. So hopefully they'll end up
indeed
better than what they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time to change.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. So that's just kind of how I, but, you know, like I said, I'm bitter. I'm angry. I'm old. I've lost my hair. It just doesn't end.
It's okay. Dangerous when a true crime writer gets bitter and angry.
I have some great ideas, I'll tell you. You don't want me calling you. What is your? How do people get a hold of you? How do they? I know you like to be stalked and have people come around and do things. So how would they do that?
I have a website. You can send me emails if you have a specific question. I am fairly active on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter, and I do have an Instagram account, but I don't post there as much as I should. I sent out a newsletter. I was going to say a periodic newsletter, but it's a very erratic newsletter. Mm. So it goes out maybe twice a year, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
and you can sign up for that on my website.
And your website is.
But I love to get emails from people because it. I love to procrastinate, so please. Okay.
And you want pictures as well?
No.
That's the modern age, you know. People like to add pictures. Now you're.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Now, your website is what? AlanOrloff.com, right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And actually, we'll have that up on our website, and so people can do one click if they're listening and want to find who you are and what books you have. And how many have you written now?
I Know Where You Sleep was my ninth.
Wow. So they're doing well? Each one does better for you, you find? Like you're still... and you still really like what you're doing?
I like what I'm doing. Each book is a challenge. You know, some people said, oh, well, you know, you've written nine, it must get easier. John, does it get easier?
Mm-mm. No.
No.
But then you have the expectations of the previous eight on your shoulders, and that all that weight makes it hard to type. I don't know.
Well, and you just yeah, well, you, I mean, you know, Alan just won last year won the Thriller Award for Pray for the Innocent. So, but maybe you had written most of I Know Where You Sleep by then. I mean, I think it's hard once you've had an award or something like that, that recognition to then feel like
yeah maybe.
Well, I'm sure people that if you've if they follow that and they're into this, they'll say, wow, you know, he's won. So they'll look forward to your next book. And so there is that.
And be sorely disappointed.
Oh.
I doubt it.
Yeah. No. No, and I agree. It doesn't get easier. It's not going to get easier. Putting it together might be because you get used to doing that. But for me, I don't.
I'll tell you what is different, Alan, and you may have found the same thing. Now I know, I'm very confident that I will be able to finish something. And I know pretty much how long it's going to take me. Whether or not it's good or not, it's not quite the same. You know, I'm not quite as confident. But I know that I'm going to sit down, and in 4 months I'm going to have a rough draft, and in 2 more months I'll have it edited, because I've done it plenty of times.
Yeah. Kind of the experience comes with it, but I agree totally. But wow. Well, this is pretty interesting. I really appreciate you coming on the show and taking the time to talk to us. I think it's very informative for people that are into writing, and very important. Your latest book is I Know Where You Sleep, and our guest has been the author, Alan Orloff. Thank you for being here. Orloff, thank you for being here.
Well, Alan, thanks so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun, and hope we can do it again sometime.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.